Thumbtack presents The Ins and Outs of Caring for Your Home. Out: procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In: plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out: carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In: knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof and massaging leather-appointed seats are available features.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Aria 10, A Storm of Swords. A little rusty on the intro because we've been gone for 2 weeks, Matt.
That is true. You know, some people sent us a message like, hey, I hope you guys are all right. Yeah, Jimmy and I just both had events that kind of came up and just kind of took us off the air for 2 weeks there. I almost thought we were gonna be off for a third one because I gotta get a wisdom tooth removed, and I was like, I literally thought I was gonna get it removed the other day, and then they were like, no, you're gonna have to get it checked out. So I was either gonna try to do the episode, you know, with the cotton in my mouth, or you know, just Jimmy have to take over. But hey, we're here, got it. We should be back on schedule for a while here. And yeah, good chapter. Some news we're gonna talk about a little bit today. The game was the Game Throw King Road is finally out. I played it. It's in early access. We're going to talk a little bit about it as well. Not super hyped about it, but what do you want to start with, Jimmy? You want to start with the news? You want to start with the game?
I think the news is a great place to start because I imagine the game is going to be extraordinarily brief.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's start with the game then. I'll make it short and brief. Game of Thrones, King's Road. It's out. It is about as mid as we've been saying what we thought. And I don't mean mid in like a bad way, as in like you shouldn't play it. I have played it on my PC with, you know, a 4090 graphics card and even maxed out. I can't say that it looks particularly amazing. Looks okay. I have not played it on mobile. I don't know if you even can play it on mobile. It might only be in Steam, you know, PC early access right now. I think it's coming out at the end of this month, so you get like the full game. I think it's a cool building block. It's a cool place to start, like being able to run around, you know, like the north and the gift and going to, you know, some of these areas we've got to see. The combat feels very much like a Dark Souls type game, which in my that's just not my type of game. I know that's a little more your type of game, Jimmy, but I think it's cool that it exists. And I think it's something that if it does well, it could transform into something cool. So I guess that's really my thoughts on it. Like even on Steam, I think it has mixed reviews. I can pull it up here and see about where it's at. But to me, it's just like, it's okay. I mean, I think if you're somebody who just wants to check it out, you could watch some gameplay footage of it. But, you know, if you're like a gamer and you really want to dive into it, I just, like you were saying right before we started, Jimmy, it's just what we want is like Skyrim, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think you could appeal to a larger mass of gamers of any age or of any gender with a game that is in its spirit like A Song of Ice and Fire, which is kind of like traveling through Westeros and Essos and experiencing life that way, making some connect, like a deeply slower paced RPG, I think is probably what people want. Not so much the action game. I felt this way about the Lord of the Rings games that they did with Shadow of Mordor and stuff. It ended up being pretty cool because the Nemesis system was neat, but I just don't think that, I think it speaks to a bigger problem, Matt. which is that Warner Brothers just is, it has no idea what this property is and why people like it. I think that it's very obvious that they've missed the mark on multiple fronts, right? End of the show. Some of the statements that they make about Game of Thrones in general. I think this is the problem with like large soulless corporations, is that they can't even begin to fathom why people like something. They just know they do. And then they try to highlight what they think it is, generally not very well, in my opinion. I don't think anyone asked for a game that was like this for Game of Thrones. I'm willing to try it out, whatever. Like, I'm not mad that it exists, but it's more so a symptom of a bigger problem of Warner Brothers just literally not knowing what they have. And it's very concerning.
It's wild. It goes a little bit bigger than that. So on Steam, there's 402 reviews. It's mixed. 64% are positive, because Steam doesn't do like a out of 10. It's just so you like it or you don't type of a thing. So then, you know, take that into consideration, what the score would really kind of be. I think once it actually comes out, we could look at like a Metacritic or IGN or, you know, whoever, gaming publisher score, and get a more accurate representation. But yeah, I'll agree with you. And one of the things that's actually been baffling me these past couple weeks is they, for whatever reason, made some new DC game. I think it's called like DC Dark Legion or something. And you're talking about one of their most flagship type things. They handed the advertising that you see on like TikTok, and I haven't seen anywhere else, but to like, you know, the mobile game, like the trash mobile games that you see when you're scrolling through TikTok or Instagram or whatever, and they come up in your advertisements. Like, I'm talking like the most mobile games, like, you know, you always see the ones like the character who's like scrolling left and right, and they're just like shooting the barrels or whatever. Yeah. And it's like all, like, they literally gave it to that type of a thing. And every comment on it is like, I cannot believe DC did this. Like, you are destroying the brand. You're tarnishing the legacy. So yeah, their games division right now, it's just, it's so bad. They have no clue what they are doing whatsoever. And it just sucks that it just sucks. So this is actually one of the best things that they have in their games recently for Warner Brothers. And maybe that's kind of my hope, is that it does well enough that hopefully they realize, hey, we should just let other people develop our games and just license them out to other, you know, big studios, because I'm sure another studio would sit there and say, oh, we would love to develop it, because a lot of people do that, like Marvel and stuff like that. You know, Disney does that too, where most they would prefer to develop it in-house. And we've talked about that with other projects. It just, they're not even to video games, but other projects as well. Like, I would love to see Netflix do some sort of anime with Game of Thrones, or I mean, I don't know that Studio Ghibli would ever be able to develop anything, but my God, that would be amazing. You know, there's tons of studios that would be able to do things with the Game of Thrones property.
Yeah, the possibilities are almost endless. It's just kind of frustrating because, you know, this costs money. This is all, it's always a risk doing some kind of new thing with an existing IP. And unfortunately, I don't trust large corporations to make good decisions after a failure either.
Right.
Like, they'll be like, oh, nobody wants a Game of Thrones game. And then we wait another 8 years for another mobile game, which I would find insanely frustrating. But I just think it kind of highlights one of the bigger problems with Warner Brothers and really like Game of Thrones going forward is like, how far are we going to get from the original secret sauce that made Game of Thrones work? Because it wasn't action and blockbuster this and that.
Right.
That came much later. And I'm not saying that there isn't a new wave of fans that really like that, because there are. You can see with a lot of the House of the Dragon criticisms that there's not enough fighting, there's not enough action. So those people have found a place in the TV fan base, but I still believe that like the beating heart of Game of Thrones comes from the way quieter moments and
sure,
would lend itself much better to a long form, slow RPG like Kingdom Come Deliverance or Skyrim.
Skyrim. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I agree. Well, hey, let's talk a little about getting away from the secret sauce here. And,
oh boy.
Let's talk about the news. So there's a very long listed, I think it's Entertainment Weekly article here. And I don't know who did it originally. Maybe it was Variety or Hollywood Reporter or whatever. But I'm going to read this Reddit post here, which I think really kind of condenses this whole thing. So this is from the Song of Ice and Fire subreddit, and this is the one that I think everyone ultimately ended up clicking on and checking out. So it says, Ryan Cundell addressed the posts for the first time, like talking about George's posts, telling Entertainment Weekly he didn't see it himself but was told about it. It was disappointing, he admits. I will simply say I've been a fan of A Song of Ice and Fire for almost 25 years now, and working on the show has been truly one of the great privileges, not only of my career as a writer, but at my life as a fan of science fiction and fantasy. George himself is a monument, a literal icon, in addition to a personal hero of mine, and was heavily influential on me coming up as a writer. Condell acknowledges he said most of this in previous interviews, including how Fire and Blood isn't a traditional narrative. This is an incomplete history, and it requires a lot of joining of the dots and a lot of invention as you go along the way, he continues. I will simply say I made every effort to include George in the adaptation process. I really did, over years and years, and we really enjoyed a mutually fruitful, I thought, really strong collaboration for a long time. But at some point, as we got deeper down the road, he just became unwilling to acknowledge the practical issues at hand in a reasonable way. And I think as a showrunner, I have kept my practical producer hat on and my creative writer, lover of the material hat on at the same time. At the end of the day, I just have to keep marching on, not only the writing process forward, but also the practical parts of the process forward for the sake of the crew, the cast, and for HBO, because that's my job. So I can only hope that George and I can rediscover the harmony someday, but that's what I have to say about it.
Yeah, they haven't talked.
Yeah.
That's over.
It's bad. My big takeaway from this is, you know, he is working with George after Game of Thrones, right? So I'm sure that some of what George is probably putting into this of like, well, it needs to be like this, it needs to be like that, is a lot of, you know, what the complaints about Game of Thrones. I mean, we're in A Storm of Swords in our reread podcast, you know, right now, and we're like, man, you know, we're literally about to get to Lady Stoneheart, and we're like, that's a huge narrative that got cut, and, you know, young Griff got cut and things like that. Could the ending of Game of Thrones still as a TV show have been good without all of that stuff? Yeah. Like, the ending to season 8 wasn't bad because it didn't have Lady Stoneheart and young Griff. Season 8 was bad because they should have done the White Walkers at the end instead of up front. And I think we've talked about this and we've done videos on it. We've seen the comments, and a lot of people would have appreciated the ending to Game of Thrones more because it felt like the whole thing was leading towards the White Walkers. So, yeah, would it have been a even better show with Lady Stoneheart and young Griff and all of these things, and had it gone on for 10 seasons? Maybe. It may not have been. But to be fair to Ryan Condell here, with, you know, he has HBO saying, hey, maybe you have to cut the budget a little bit. So, okay, I'm going to have to move this here and move this here. Can we criticize season 2? Yeah. Like, to me, you know, a lot of people were upset with the lack of like a big battle. We thought we were going to get one. The battle we did get, episode 4, where Rhaenys was killed. Epic. Awesome. Everybody was talking about it. It's one of the highest rated episodes of all of A Song of Ice and Fire. To me, my issue was with season 2 was I could not believe that they put the dragon seeds took like 4 episodes. Like, we thought that pace was going to be much quicker, and now you're gonna have to make it up in seasons 3 and 4. Ryan Condell, I think, here is kind of saying, without like criticizing HBO, because it is his job, I think you can even read, and he's like, that was kind of out of my hands, right?
Yeah, he has more people to answer to than just George and himself. I think that's one of the— remember how I was talking about big soulless corporations?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you know, going into that season thinking they have 10, they start everything and then get told 8. He did the best he could, I think. And one of the things I'm seeing, there's people who have like different complaints. There's a variety of complaints about season 2. I happen to think it's—
you and I both liked it.
Yeah, I still think it's great television, even though you and I had complaints. Like, I don't think the sky was falling as many other people seem to have kind of declared. George coming out against the show pretty much full sail is definitely not helping that. And I'll continue on that point a little bit later, but I think that the thing that is kind of disappointing is I'm seeing a lot of people like hitch their personal complaints with like that George is upset about this, I bet. Sorry, when in reality, it's all good. But we kind of know that George is, you know, upset about how dragon taming and bonding and everything is working. But on top of that, also very upset about some characters being cut. And I'm sure there is a plethora of things that he is upset about. And we've only seen like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to these things. But at the end of the day, it's Ryan Condell's job to make the best show possible to keep not only the viewers happy, the cast and crew happy, but also HBO and the stockholders happy. It's not a very enviable position outside of the fact that he's probably making an absurd amount of money, which is, you know, good for him. But I don't believe that Ryan Condell is like going into this thing heartless and wanting to make right. the worst show of all time. I think he wants to make a really good show. And so the Dragon Seed thing, for instance, I think that some of the stuff that's going to come later is actually going to have a really big impact on, and I'm talking pretty much about people who haven't read Fire and Blood. I think getting to know those Dragon Seeds a little bit more is going to end up having amazing payoffs down the line because of what we know, you know, bullet points from Fire and Blood. Not to mention that that whole dragon episode, which basically serves as the climax kind of for the season, mm-hmm. to be honest, it was pretty awesome. I thought we and you, I think we both loved that episode. It was really great. Yeah. And Hugh the Hammer. I mean, there's so many things about this season that I think are highlights of the seasons that were not necessarily highlights of Fire and Blood, more so just kind of bullet points in many regards. So in some ways, I think Ron Condell's made some good changes or good changes of focus. And others I'm concerned about. I'm super concerned with the fact that we might now be on an 8-episode schedule. That doesn't have much to do with Ryan Condell. I am concerned about the cutting of Nettles. I think that kind of sucks, if I'm being honest. Like, I'm not, until season 3 comes out, we can't say for sure that Nettles is not happening, but I feel like it's very obvious right. that Nettles isn't going to happen. Yeah. And I think that sucks. I actually don't love that. Then there's the kids. There's a missing kid, which made Blood and Cheese weird. So there's always a ripple effect. And I think that's one of the things that George has talked about multiple times is like you cut this little thing that you think is just a side, but in reality, it changes the entire story, the butterfly effect of storytelling. So it's tough. George hasn't worked in TV in a long time either. So I'm sure that he probably doesn't have as much empathy as maybe someone who's worked in television a little bit more recently. And I mean like full blown work in television, not just in the writer's room and producing and stuff. I'm talking about like, that's their full-time gig.
Right.
George has always been a bit bitter towards the television industry, even though he's made a ton of money in it and he's worked in it for many decades. You can go back before Game of Thrones. You know, he had uncharitable things to say about the state of television. And I think maybe some of that is being brought out here, possibly. But also, and this is my final point, I just honestly think that we don't have all the context of this feud. There's so much that can't be said because of NDAs. There's so much behind closed doors. Personally, what was promised to George, what was you know, guaranteed to him, I don't know. So I don't really pick sides. I just am kind of cheering for both parties, but I do believe that George being against the show, there is absolutely zero chance that the internet receives it well, which is only a part of the crowd that watches right. the television show. But unfortunately for you and I, those are the people who come and listen to this podcast. So I expect season 3 of House of Dragon to be not very fun to cover, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. I'm honestly way more looking forward to Duncan Egg, which I prefer Duncan Egg as a story.
Well, personally, we're excited for season 3 though. Let's be clear. Like,
absolutely. If it came out tomorrow, I'd be watching it. Like, I mean, the second, and that still doesn't mean it will end up being amazing.
Oh, it could be objectively, which people argue if anything could be objectively good in art, but let's just say it was objectively good. If George is against the show, there's just a preset amount of people who are just going to spew hatred towards it, which kind of sucks because there is room for criticism. Like,
I don't, you know, we've joked about whether George listens or not. I don't think he listens to it.
He does
not. But he does not.
He does not.
But maybe somebody he knows does. Hey, look, all I'm saying is, look, Duncan Egg is coming out this year. You know, he's working on it, but If you're really that spiteful, George, if you're really, you know, you really want to stick it to him, you finish Wins a Winner and you say the day season 3 drops, you say Wins is done. I mean, the ball's in your court now, right? Because, I mean,
There is really, that sentiment, right?
If it's if you really want to stick it to them, you know, because otherwise, if House of the Dragon season three, so that's a good, which is going to happen, is do you think House of the Dragon season three will air before Georgia finishes Winds of Winter? Because
yes,
yeah, I think so. I think so too. But then that gets to be kind of HBO's standpoint from as well. We're going to keep adapting your work because you sold us the rights. I mean, you didn't have to. You didn't have to sell them the rights, right? You know, so yeah, it's just it's tough, you know, when you see this type of stuff.
It is. It's no fun. It's certainly not fun to talk about online, where I think people are very excited about hating things. I think that's generally where people could put a lot of energy into. Whereas, you know, us, we're not going to blindly just love everything, but we've always taken time to kind of try to articulate why we like things, why we dislike things. And I would rather it be a more nuanced conversation without like a pre-bias going in with, you know, George kind of leading a charge against the show. But hey, I'm with you. Like, George is very bitter towards TV in a lot of regards, bitter towards Ryan Condell. Like, yeah, dude, do what you do best, which is write amazing fantasy books. Like, let's just get one out there.
Yeah, ball's in your court. So
yeah, let's just focus on the books, because he made that blog post about how books are always better than the show, almost always, and I agree with him. So give me the book, bro.
Yeah,
give me the book. I love you, George. You're my favorite author. Yeah. I've never been one of these people who are like, we want wins. You know, I hate George for not. I've never been.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/RedCircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/RedCircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/RedCircle.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another. And don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation. But then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof, massaging leather appointed seats are available features.
That guy, but when I see this type of thing, I do kind of want him to, all right, you know, do a boss move and drop the thing.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Then you can let people decide what's better, right? So
yeah,
I'm with you. All right. Well, hey, here we go. Let's dive in. Here we are back to a short chapter, but this is it. We're here. We have finally officially arrived to the Red Wedding. It's not the actual Red Wedding itself, but we have arrived to the Red Wedding literally.
And the final chapter before the Catelyn chapter. Yeah,
for sure. So, Sandor and Arya arrive at the Twins, where Sandor hopes to ransom Arya to her family. To get there, the Hound had robbed a farmer of his wagon and casks to disguise themselves as simple farmers who have come to bring pork to the feast. The castle is closed, so they are sent to the pavilions instead, where the common soldiers are. Arya recognizes a few coat of arms, but there is nobody she knows. The soldiers drink to the health of Queen Jaime, whose name is unfamiliar to Arya. As Sandor wants to ransom Arya, they head to the castle. And, like I said, this chapter itself is actually like really short. I think the audiobook was like 10 minutes. I mean, there's really not a ton to it, but I think what it is, we've been building and building and building this tension of the Red Wedding. We've been seeing things going slightly weird. We've been seeing things, you know, not making sense. We felt the danger like we felt in last time in the Catelyn chapter, where, okay, you can see Walter Frey saying, having these slights here and there, but mm-hmm. hey, we should be protected. But the thing I really like about this chapter is you can finally tell that everything isn't right. Like, there's a lot of soldiers outside of the castle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, soldiers who seem ready to go, ready mm-hmm. to go to battle, like ready
not
to
a
go
wedding
to war,
but a battle.
Yeah. And this, and actually the best thing about the chapter is honestly the Hound. Like, you like that, you can even tell the Hound is like, something's kind of off here, right? Mm-hmm. And what it does is it sets you up for the next chapter where it feels like, uh-oh, we're trapped inside.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay, well then what's the situation inside, which was already ominous to begin with. And let's not forget, we've been following Arya around this book a ton. We've followed her through many, many, many miles and leagues to get to this point where she's about to be reunited with her family. And little does she know, she will not be reunited with her family ever again, at least when it comes to her brother Rob and her mother Catelyn, though Lady Stoneheart leaves kind of an open door for that. I think that this is one of the rug pulls that hurts the most when you think outside of obviously the deaths, but thinking about poor little Arya, who is just a little girl, fingertips away, you know, from basically mm-hmm. being able to walk through a door and see her mother and who she hasn't seen in a very long time at this point. It's really sad. It's really, really sad.
It is.
And, you know, another thing about this is interesting to me is just a reminder about how information travels through Westeros, which is one of my favorite devices of the series. Queen Jane. Let's drink the Queen Jane. Who's Jane? Arya has no idea. And think about this. After the Red Wedding, you know, we'll get to her chapters, but we should go in with the mindset that Arya still doesn't know all the details. Arya honestly couldn't tell you what really happened at the Red Wedding outside of the fact that her family is dead. They've been betrayed, but she doesn't understand the links of decisions that have led to this point. Like, she is completely unaware of all of this. And it leaves Westeros on a boat and goes to Essos without many answers at all, other than the fact that she has lived through once again another tragedy. Like, that is so impactful to her character arc later down the road, and not having those answers. So when she does end up coming back to Westeros, I wonder, will she see Jane? Will she learn more? Like, will she learn about her brother and his final you know what I mean? Like, there is opportunities for Arya to actually have this revisited later down the line and get more context for everything that was happening.
Yeah. One of the lines here that's actually, it's kind of almost in a way like a throwaway line, but to me it sums up this chapter and really, you could argue, a lot of Arya's arc in general. So it's just like in the third, I guess, thirdish paragraph here. The riders split and circled them for a look before they came up close. Clegane drew the wain to halt and waited patiently on their pleasure. The knight bore spear and sword while his squires carried longbows. The badges on their jerkins were smaller versions of the sigil sewn on their maester's surcoat. A black pitchfork on a golden bar, sinister upon a russet field. Arya had thought of revealing herself to the first outriders they encountered, but she had always pictured gray-cloaked men with the direwolf on their breasts. She might have risked it even if they had worn the Umber Giant or the Glover Fist, but she did not know the Pitchfork Knight of whom they served. The closest thing to a pitchfork she'd ever seen at Winterfell was the trident in the hand of Lord Manderly's merriman. So I just like that line in there. Like, Arya had pictured them with the direwolves on their breasts, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. so much of what she's thinking. Like, oh, I'm gonna go and it's gonna be Rob's men and everything's going to be great, and it's not. And she's yeah. like, oh, and then she sees something else. Like, they think that, you know, Ned Stark's gonna be able to take the black, and he can't, and he's beheaded, and that's what she sees. Like, it feels like, then same thing, we go meet Jack and Hagar, and I think she's thinking it's going to be something else, and it's, whoa, now I'm, you know, blind. And that's like so much of her story is that
not
is
great.
The same thing with that line. Yeah,
not great, right? A lot of ruined expectations. I mean, we could even go into this about Sansa, right, and how Sansa imagined this going. You could do this with Cersei and what she imagined Robert's death playing out like This series is all about putting people in very precarious positions and ruining their expectations. I think anyone who's an adult can attest to the fact that our expectations are usually readjusted through not the best means, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, what's it going to be like when she comes back and she, who knows? I mean, I think that's one of that's I don't know if we're going to get that same scene, but in the show, like, it's one of the most rewarding scenes ever is, and it's such a small little, like, I don't know. It's not, I don't even think the whole scene's like 2 minutes is where she goes and meets Hot Pie, and Hot Pie's like, oh, didn't you hear the Starks retook Winterfell? It's like, what? Yeah.
Excuse me,
because she was totally like planning on. She's like, I'm gonna go to King's Landing, right? She told Ed Sheeran that I'm gonna go kill. She said, I'm gonna go kill Cersei. And they're like laughing, like, yeah, you know.
I guess right? The expectations kind of go both ways, right? People expect Arya to be a destroyed, distraught, traumatized little girl, and we know that she will be coming back to Westeros with a power that no one will expect.
Yeah. This paragraph two here. Evenfall found them still trudging toward the Green Fork in Lady Frey's twin's castle. I am almost there, Arya thought. She knew she ought to be excited, but her belly was all knotted up tight. Maybe that was just the fever she'd been fighting, but maybe not. Last night, she'd had a bad dream, a terrible dream. She couldn't remember what she'd dreamed of now, but the feeling had lingered all day. If anything, it had only gotten stronger. Fear cuts deeper than swords. She had to be strong now. That's the way her father told her. There was nothing between her and her mother but a castle gate, a river, and an army. But it was Rob's army, so there was no real danger there. Was there? Yeah. Even she knows she has a bad dream. They don't talk about what the dream is. And she starts to freak out about it a little bit. Then the next chapter, Roose Bolton was one of them, though, the Leech Lord, as the outlaws called him. That made her uneasy. She had fled Harrenhal to get away from Bolton as much as she did the Bloody Mummers, and she had to cut the throat of one of his guards to escape. Did he know she'd done that, or did he blame Gendry or Hot Pie? You know, it continues on a little bit there. It talks about the Hound. The Hound had hacked handfuls of her hair off only 2 days past. He was an even worse barber than Yorin, and he'd left her half bald on one side. Rob won't know me either, I bet, or even mother. She had been a little girl the last time she saw them, the day Lord Eddard Stark left Winterfell. And then it talks about the music. They could hear the music as they're heading to the castle.
Yeah, and the music will continue next chapter with the drums and the Reigns of Castamere and all these things. Kind of a crescendo next chapter, you could say, a very dark one. I like this piece that you read, though, because it's George tidying up a little bit here, saying, hey, there's a reason why people aren't recognizing Arya Stark. It's because Arya Stark has grown up, at least some. Like, you know, she's rapidly changing. You know, kids between like 7 and 14, oh my God, they change so much. But on top of that, you got the Hound giving her a fresh fade. And apparently he did not get the lines right. So I think this is George kind of tidying up a little bit and reminding us maybe why Arya would not be recognized, on top of the fact that there's tons of people who don't travel enough to even know what the Stark kids look like. So without their cloak and standing next to their dad, who is now deceased. Also, Eddard Stark mentioned a ton. In just a short amount of time, his specter kind of weighs heavy on all of the Stark children. And it's one of the reasons why I think we believe in the family of the Starks so much, is because they never forget their father, which I think for the most part is true for all of us as well. When we lose a loved one or a parent, we tend to think about them in times that we would probably least expect it. So I think that that's pretty, pretty powerful.
Yeah. Okay, well, it continues on a little bit here, and then you're literally in like one of the final paragraphs. Like I said, this chapter is not very long. But who is Queen Jane? Arya wondered briefly. The only queen she knew was Cersei. So like, she doesn't even know that there's five kings.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, she's completely out of the loop. I mean, she definitely heard something from the Brotherhood Without Banners. The Brotherhood Without Banners is kind of her like catch up, her info dump, to get back into the idea of what's going on in Westeros, but all of the details are extremely hazy for her.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So they're continuing on, they're walking a little bit. She's smelling some of the fires and like, or some of the food that's being cooked on the fires and all of that stuff. The smell made Arya's mouth water. "Shouldn't we stop?" she asked Sandor Clegane. "There's Northmen in the tents." She knew them by their beards, by their faces, by their cloaks, the bearskins and sealskins, by the half-heard toast, the songs they sang, Karstarks and Umbermen. "I bet there are Winterfell men there too. Her father's men, the young wolf's men, the dire wolves of Starks. Your brother will be in the castle," he said. "Your mother too. You want them or not?" "Yes," she said. "What about Sedgekins?" Another character. The sergeant had told them to ask for Sedgekins. "He could bugger himself with a hot poker." Clegane shook out his whip and sent it hissing through the soft rain to bite at a horse flank. "It's your bloody brother I want." Well, her brother is also about to be bloody, by the way.
Yes, yes, he is. And think about how many degrees away from Arya is from being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they catch them going into the gate and reunite, get the everything exchanged, Arya is part of the Red Wedding and she's dead.
Yeah.
Missing by fractions of a second. I mean, we could also do this with Ned Stark's beheading.
Yeah.
She was lucky to escape.
Yeah. You know, another character on the flip side of this thing, by the way, I think to sort of think of, and then I'll go briefly into just like the hints and stuff. I've got that pulled up here, is, and we don't know if his end is the same way it is in the show. I think it's gonna be tough just because a lot of that stuff doesn't exist, but like Roose Bolton's kind of the flip side of Arya. Like, he had Arya Stark within his grasp. Mm-hmm. Think of how much leverage that would have given him, and now he doesn't have that. Then he almost has Arya again here and doesn't have her. And maybe when we come to Roose Bolton's end, we can look back and we can be like, man, here's a character who messed up, who really messed up multiple times.
Here's a guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Chris Collins.
No,
yeah.
You're right, though. I mean, we wonder about, like, will Ramsay kill Roose? Like, where does this go? Because Roose Bolton, I think, is a lot more prevalent in the books, considering the fact that he was the one sitting in Harrenhal, and it was not Tywin, which we like that change from the show quite a bit. I think everyone agrees on that, because Charles Dance is the friggin' man. However, Roose Bolton has a way bigger role in the books and is seen more as a main antagonist, at least in my eyes. Ramsay supersedes him both in show and book. For most people, Arya could very well be the end of Roose Bolt.
Mm-hmm. I think she might be. I mean, it's going to be tough because you look at the show and the book difference. I mean, there's just so many more variables, like Jon Snow, the Pink Letter, all totally doesn't
Hard actually have happening in a different time. Yeah,
he never actually had Sansa, like. All this stuff. Well, yeah. But your idea of him, of Arya being the one to do it, is interesting, because they believe they're married, that he has the real Arya, when they don't. And it's like, I'm the real Arya Stark, but she's no one. Maybe it ties into the whole true identity, you know, business.
What if we go to the whole series and Arya Stark is never known as Arya Stark ever again? Like, what if that is her character arc? She comes back and maybe the only person to really recognize her is John, because we know John and her have a really tight connection. She thinks about him quite a bit. Maybe there's a chance that when Arya Stark comes back to Westeros, she is no longer Arya Stark. I'm going to just go ahead and cut myself off here, though. I think all signs point to her becoming Arya Stark and fulfilling that role and finding herself. And that's how she ends up getting out of the situation. And I also think that her reconvening with Sansa is going to be one of the biggest moments in the series for the Stark kids.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think I'm just going to go ahead and shit on my own theory then.
No, that's okay. All right. Well, hey, let me pull up here. Sort of last thing here. I'll pull up some of the foreshadowing. There's definitely a lot of cool foreshadowing here. So this is from a Reddit comment and thread. So the last chapter before the Red Wedding, the atmosphere from the beginning is weird. And there's a feeling in the chapter that something's not right. You know, again, we see the hate Sandor has toward knights, because knights are fools, and it would have been beneath him to look twice at some poxy peasant. Keep your eyes down and your tone respectful and say sir a lot, and most knights will never see you. They pay more attention to their horse than small folk. Okay, so for some of the hints, the musicians in the near castles were playing a different song than the ones on the castle on the far bank, though it sounded more like a battle than a song. They're not very good, Arya observed. Well, that's because they're not musicians. The music grew still louder as they approached the castle, but under that was a deeper, darker sound. The river, the swollen green fork, growling like a lion in its den. Oh, there you have, like, you know, the force of the lions of Lannister, right?
Mm.
But for every shimmering silk pavilion, there were 24 felt or canvas, opaque and dark. There were barrack tents, too, big enough to shelter 20 foot soldiers, though even though they were dwarfed by the great feast tents. Beneath the tree, 4 archers were slipping wax strings over the notches of their longbows, but they were not her father's archers. The Starks were outnumbered. The Freys, no. They were ready for the fight. They had been preparing and brought a lot of soldiers while the Northmen were enjoying the feast. And everywhere Arya looked, she saw unfamiliar faces running, drinking, getting ready, while she and Sandor were going deeper into the campus surrounded by enemies.
Mm.
It's like the one of the most insane things about this whole thing, the whole Red Wedding event, is that Arya and Clegane get out of there.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, degrees away from being murdered.
Right. Because everyone there is definitely going to, like, a lot of the people there are going to know him as the Hound. And remember, the Hound at this point,
he's a wanted man.
He's also a wanted man. Exactly.
They want his head. Do you think Rob would have taken him hostage?
No, I don't. I think
it would just let him walk.
I think it would have been another. If that had happened, I think it would have been another Catelyn versus Rob moment that would have built to something else.
Okay. Because for me, I was thinking that, yes, they would take him because of how much people put on him, that he's just like his brother, and his brother has done all these things during this war, like war crimes. And I was thinking maybe they would feel the need to take him in, like, as House Clegane, right? Like,
right. Yeah, I think that if George had kept him alive and nobody had died at the Red Wedding, it would have just been another block in the Catelyn versus Rob, like, the
difference of
it. Because then it would have been everyone saying, you need to kill this guy, or you need to take him prisoner, and Catelyn would be like, Catelyn would be like, well, I got my daughter back. That's what I wanted. You know, and it could have been another piece in the Rob.
You think Catelyn would have said, let him go?
Maybe. I mean, she let Tyrion go.
Yeah, she did. She messed up a couple times, didn't she?
Yeah. So
it's interesting to think about.
Yeah, so it ties into that. So, well, with that, Jimmy, we are finally officially here. So we want to thank you guys, as always, for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 51, Catelyn 7.
The Red Wedding commences. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.